Life of Sir Aglovale de Galis. Chapter 4. My most dear master has set down at length how Sir Turquine hated Sir Launcelot and died at his hands, how he used his prisoners so that many perished, and how 64 good knights outlived him to report the pains and shames he laid upon them. The tale ran hot against the next record of Aglovale. King Pellinore, with his sons Aglovale and Lamorack, came to Arthur's hall. They heard the sound of a great voice booming up to the rafters, the well-known voice of that good knight, Sir Griflet le Fils de Dieu. At their entrance, it ceased suddenly, and Sir Griflet and all of the fellowship there present stood silent, as up the hall to salute King Arthur went Pellinore between his two sons, Sir Lamorack the renowned, shapely and debonair, and Sir Aglovale, a dark travesty of him in feature and nature, ill-favored from within outwards, ungainly also by misfortune, for since Humber's Greenway he walked uneven. Silence held while salutations passed. To Aglovale the king's return was formal, but Pellinore and Lamorack he welcomed and embraced, and kept them beside him. With a darkened countenance, Aglovale turned alone to take his place. Then the silence struck him, and the looks that centered at him. Knights he passed barely returned his salutation. Sir Griflet alone spoke kindness, hearty and loud. With misgiving he looked for Sir Marhaus. Lo, his place was void and covered black, for he was then dead, lately slain by Sir Tristram for the truage of Cornwall. King Arthur spoke. Sir Aglovale, here are you come in good season to meet a heavy charge. God grant you be clear thereof, that you may give as good an answer for yourself as Sir Griflet was ready to give on your behalf. Then he called out his nephew, Sir Gaheris, and bade him rehearse it. But before ever a word was said, Aglovale's guilt looked out of his blasted face for all to see. Gaheris held the whole ugly story exact on every point. It had rounded complete to Sir Marhaus upon speech with his dying friend, and from him the sons of Lot had it, and since he no longer lived himself to prefer the charge, they, out of good hate to the house of Pellinore, were forward and fain to press it. Therefore, said Gaheris, when he had told it all, a liar and traitor I declare you, Sir Aglovale de Galis, and causer of the deaths of a fair kind lady and a noble true knight, and I cry you a shame on the fellowship of the Round Table. Aglovale leaned heavy on his sword. The gentle head of Gilius turned away, and the silence she took to the grave accused him more hardly than did Sir Gaheris. Twice King Arthur summoned his answer. To a dead hush he rung out, "It is truth," said Aglovale. Through the hall sounded one great breath of indignation and amazement upon an answer so wildly amiss. Then an angry hum swelling, and the wrathful eyes of King Pellinore, and the cry of Lamorack as he cursed high, brought the unhappy man to his senses. With the right answer, vainly he followed the wrong. "Prove it on my body," he cried. He could not overtake his error. One cried for him to be heard, one only, Sir Griflet. A crash of voices opposed. Again and again, Aglovale, desperate, lifted the right answer. With liar and traitor loud against him from many throats, he was beaten hoarse. King Arthur commanded silence, to deny him his asking. "Since Sir Gaheris hath charged you with great villainy, and you, Sir Aglovale, have answered aye thereto, now betwixt you there is no ground for debate. And as you are thus accorded, to go to battle were a wrong I will in no wise countenance." "Look on him now," said Gaheris, low, to his brothers. "I have heard tell that King Pellinore's queen, when she carried him, envisaged the questing beast." "My lord Arthur," cried Aglovale, "even as I am fellow and partner to the worship of the Round Table, so are all here present also fellows and partners to any disworship of mine. Sir, by your head, as this noble company give me to know they have no liking for my fellowship, by your head, give me leave to answer with my body whoso wills to prove me unworthy this high order of fellowship. And that shall be proved never while I have life, never, for I promise, my lord, I will never yield myself as overcome. And howsoever I have answered Sir Gaheris, wit you all, it was out of no fear of him, nor of better than he. And that can I make good by whosoever should undertake to slay me." "Sir Aglovale," returned Arthur, "the charge concerns you as liar and traitor, as at this time you are not appealed as a coward." Sir Gaheris let him know his danger. With loud scorn he refused him, and warned him they could be lightly rid of his fellowship by means of a cart and a hempen twist, as no noble knight would have ado with him. Aglovale at that shrank, and lost power to speak. He heard other voices with Sir Gaheris, for many knights present had come out of Turquin's prison, and these, hot and bitter from the vile outrage they had endured, were the hardest on Aglovale's misconduct. Maybe the merciless condemnation of him by men themselves, not blameless, as namely Sir Gawain, leaned on a suspicion that by a good understanding with Sir Turquin he had accomplished his villainous ends. King Pellinore understood why, after Gaheris had spoken, Aglovale's gaze turned quick to him and held hard. He looked with recall of time past at the day he entered the fellowship of the Table Round, when the son avowed his deserving of shameful death, when the father gripped his sword with a will, when the right answer was rehearsed. Now King Pellinore made no sign. With a Roman heart he watched his infamous son, and he would in no manner speak for him. "Whatsoever you will, my lord Arthur, I assent thereto." Lamorack in a fury was jerking at his sword, but King Pellinore kept his hand on the hilts to hold it down. Then into the hall came Sir Durnor. With a great clatter, according to his wont, he came swinging through the midst and saluted Arthur, and then his father and brother, kissing them heartily. "And brother Sir Aglovale, where is he?" said Durnor. He looked about, saw where he stood, and turned. But Lamorack withheld him, and let him know how Aglovale had been charged, and how he had answered. Then went Durnor, muttering strong oaths in his beard, and came straight to Aglovale. "Alas, brother, you are unhappy," he said, and kissed his cheek. Now had Lamorack been so kind, almost might the heart of Aglovale have burst for joy. But of Durnor he could take little comfort, for he set no store on him and his easy, imperfect conditions. Great above all voices rose Sir Griflet's again. "Lo, my lord Arthur," Here am I, not discharged from my quarrel.
How so? Said Arthur.
Now you must needs withdraw, for done by Sir Aglovale's own word.
Not for that will I withdraw, said Griflet. Against Sir Gaheris I did affirm that Sir Aglovale de Galis was a good knight and true, and promised to prove it with my body, and I think not to go back on what I have once said.
Then Aglovale smote down his head, red to the hair for the scathe of such kindness. Others stared and questioned. Some deemed there was mockery afoot, for that maker of sharp jests, Sir Dinadan, had been seen whispering Sir Griflet, and now he stood at Sir Gaheris's elbow and whispered him. Sir Gaheris laughed in a manner.
As for my part, said he on high, I take right to be excused jeopardy of my person, seeing that a nearer party to the case is now present.
So were I the better pleased to encounter, said Sir Griflet, and earnestly he looked on Aglovale. At that Sir Kay, Sir Mordred, and others, discourteous, made laughter, but Arthur was displeased, saying he liked no japes played with the honour of the Round Table.
"My lord," said Griflet, "I am in order, and in earnest, and right fain."
Aglovale lifted up his head. He understood. Here was favour generously offered, but involved in a mockery like fire to his face. He took up his part.
"Sir Griflet," he said, "none but I shall stand to the contrary against you. In mortal battle I will abide you, as long as I may, with what might I have, and the loath word I will never speak."
Spite of the king's frown, laughter overbore indignation, and swept the hall, till even Durnor tingled for his blood.
Eye to eye, Aglovale and Griflet waited till Arthur made himself heard.
Enchafed, he warned Sir Griflet he was standing to folly and untruth.
"You speak as you hold, my lord," answered Griflet, "but since I list to hold otherwise, I require you set the day, that I may make good my words on Sir Aglovale."
Naught that the king and others could do with language availed to move him from his purpose.
"My lord Arthur," cried Aglovale, "you and all others, my fellows, who approve of the titles I stand to maintain, dread not that they will fail, while I have life in my body, to enforce them to the uttermost. For I declare and vow that I never will yield recreant to Sir Griflet. And if you shall find any default in my battle, then stint not to please Sir Gaheris of cart and cord." Then Arthur, yet in anger, appointed the morn to them, and went to dinner.
This was the day when Sir Launcelot came back from many adventures in Sir Kay's harness, as my most dear master tells. Aglovale passed out with Durnor as he was entering, and the thunder of welcome reached after them as they went. Aglovale sighed and muttered, "Yet sooth, Sir Griflet is a right noble knight." Said Durnor,
"He is big and hardy and wary, and passing sure, yet may you speed."
"God mend your wits," said Aglovale fiercely, "you are but a fool."
And he shut his heart against his brother.
"It is truth," groaned Durnor,
and cursed his scatterbrains.
Aglovale winced at the chance echo. "I would you left me, you who are there. You knew him, you saw him. Why did he die? Tell me he died for pure sorrow."
"Alas, brother, I know not. Many died for pure want. So died one at his side, whose chain was for Sir Marhaus later." Aglovale muttered,
would Sir Marhaus had lived, for he equaled Lamorack. Imperfectly grateful was he, in his greedy heart, to the loyal brother Durnor, and the friend Griflet, who did him such kindness and grace. "Sir Marhaus," said Durnor, "was quit with but a day of present. Who knows, the summer underground might have killed him also." Aglovale rejected that sop. "Who knows his day? Who keeps a constant level? Shall I tomorrow fight at my level, no better or no worse?" "Aglovale, more than your due you take and have. You are not answerable for the brutal custom of Sir Turquin. And by all likelihood, Sir Marhaus had never at his best achieved that rescue." "So granted. My treason was to utter waste. Sir Durnor, I need not your lights, for I have enough. God help you alone, brother, as you will have none of me," said Durnor, with tears in his eyes. "My God, my God," cried Aglovale, "I doubt not." Nacien's words of consolation were in remembrance. "Doubt not, but that God shall reward you for your sins." Durnor was but musing aloud when he spoke again. "And indeed she was a passing fair lady." Aglovale started from him. "Fair Christ, deliver Percival from any brotherly kindness like this!" Durnor followed, but durst not speak any more, since wherever he touched, from hidden veins spouted fire. Aglovale turned. "Ah, pardon, Durnor, of your kindness, for I am cursed, for I am but a dead man underfoot, rotting for burial. Have patience with me till the sun go round." Durnor held him with his arms and took great sorrow. "Ah, brother, is there no remedy? Jesu, have mercy!" For the maintenance of an hour, Aglovale, kneeling, waited on King Pellinore for a little mercy and one favor. "Let not young Percival be taught blame of me. And when he is grown a knight, of your charity, bring him to my grave to pray some prayer for my soul. Judge you by my battle tomorrow, if I deserve. Though you curse me living, when I am dead, yet make peace to my name." Lamorack came in and loosed his wrath on his brother. He raged because of his answer. "How have you shamed us all, Sir Aglovale, and needless? There was no proof, none. The knight is dead, the lady dead, Sir Marhaus dead. There was no proof, merely hearsay by the mouth of Sir Gaheris wanting your answer. And you answered unknightly, like a shaveling. So is our blood shamed before all the round table, before the face of the house of Lot that is wrought for our despite. And for that answer, know I hate, and will never forgive you so long as you live." "Then as I think, Sir Lamorack, you will not hate me long." "Oh, fool, so are you shent. On Sir Gaheris you might have sped, but Sir Griflet is of better might than you, and needs must we be glad of it. Fee and woe on such vile folly." "Ah, sire, ah, brother, though I have lived ill, yet if I die well, incline to Sir Griflet's contention. On my faith, it will have as much worth as my poor body can bestow." Durnor clamored and wept and cursed. Others, he said, were lightly quit of blame. Sir Gawain by fraud and unfaith had enjoyed the Lady Ettard, as all knew. Yet was he at ease and loud against Aglovale. Then King Pellinore named Gilius with Etard, miscalling her in such a manner that hastily Aglovale rose up and departed. Quiet and dark lay St. Stephen's at dusk, as Aglovale issued clean-shriven for the morn. Nearby the king's palace was beaming with light, and there shout and laughter rocked for the joy of Launcelot. He stood to listen, and he was very heavy, for his life then stood but at 24 years. By came Sir Griflet le Fils de Dieu, entering on the like errand. "Naught," he said, but as he passed his adversary, he put out his hand. And Aglovale fell kneeling behind him, and kissed his hand and kissed his sword, in passionate worship for the gift of honorable death they've promised him. And his full heart got ease with weeping. To a fair meadow beside Camelot, all white with lady smocks, came at early day King Arthur with his knights to judge the battle. And there came King Pellinore and his son Lamorack, stark and sober, to witness. And there came Griflet with kin and fellows. And there came Aglovale with Durnor. Then must either party rehearse his contention before the king. And as Aglovale gave out his name and the titles and cause he had to maintain, such a mock of acclaim endorsed him as paid outright on all his incontinence after worship. At that, Sir Griflet lifted up his great voice. He was ready, he said, so soon as he had done with Sir Aglovale, to have ado with whoever should please to take up his contention after. "Be content with what license you have," said Arthur. He was vexed and angry. Then Griflet and Aglovale, having done with words all that was due, rode asunder, fetched their range, feutered their spears, and, at a signal, came together with all the speed of their horses. Aglovale was smitten down with a wound in his side. Before Sir Griflet could turn again, he was on his feet, calling on him to light down. As for his hurt, it trimmed him for battle. The pain of it quickened his heart, that the breath of derision had left like a dead cinder within him. They took out their swords and began strong battle on foot, hammering so hard that their harness was all dinted and broken and darkened from bloody wounds. Tracing and giving from the bright sun, they circled up and down till that white meadow was trodden and defiled as though herds had gone over, and none could say which of them had the advantage. Sir Griflet was held to be the better knight, and so he seemed by his clean strokes and foins. But Sir Aglovale had his old practice with the left hand, and took to it when the right was weary. For upwards of an hour they fought without stint, and then they stood apart to breathe a while. Sir Griflet put off his helm and faced the cool wind. Sir Aglovale put off his.
"Oh, shame," said Sir Lamorack, "to uncover such a face as that."
"His lips are white," said Sir Durnor. "As I know him, he will do extremes."
Again the two armed their heads and went to battle, and for an hour more they fought strongly and bled much, while none could forecast the issue, so even and stout they stood. Then Durnor cried, "By God's eyes, Sir Aglovale is standing to him against the sun!" But so he did, was soon seen beyond question, and then all could espy that even with that advantage yielded him, Sir Griflet was giving back. His strokes were random, his shield was low. In the end a good blow beat down sword and rove through helm, and he fell. In great dread, Aglovale stood still, waiting for his adversary to rise. Then he went and put off his helm, and found that he lived and moved.
"Alas, Sir Griflet, now are you overcome, and must yield."
Griflet answered weakly,
"Sir Aglovale, though I be overcome, yet will I not yield. So take your sword and slay me outright."
"Have pity and yield," cried Aglovale, "for so I but keep my dishonor, and should I slay you, I have it at increase."
"I had liefer die," said Griflet, "for truly I find you, Sir Aglovale, even a better knight than I deemed."
But Aglovale moved away a little, put off his own helm, and sat to rest, in hope that Griflet might recover force to stand up against him. In a frenzy he tore up the green with his hands, and all the pale flowers round him were dappled red with white, true colored for that time of Pentecost.
"In the name of God, Sir Griflet, assay to rise so soon as you may, for our blood goes from us, and yours more than mine."
So Griflet did on his helm, and got to his feet, and Aglovale stood up to meet him. But his shield he left, and his head he laid bare, and he stood against the sun to perform his battle. At that Arthur was displeased, and knights partorous came down the field with his command to Aglovale to arm his head duly. So ill-advised was Aglovale as to answer the king in Mogre and Orgul, for he said he would not, he would fight so as he pleased. "And if," he said, "my lord Arthur holds me so in default, I ween as by agreement he may sort me with a hempen cord, and I would have him to know how, for that adjustment, I list to leave my neck bare and ready. But tell him that against Sir Griflet, faithfully my hands will keep my head to the best of my power." Greatly incensed was King Arthur at so despiteful an answer, and full soon had Aglovale cause to rue it. He kept his head fairly, while he struck but seldom, needing his sword for defense. Sir Griflet held on, and twice reached his head, gashing cheek and scalp, but he bled so fast that he could not stand long. At a light stroke he went down, finally, and required his death.
"Ah, Sir Griflet, what is the worth of my name against the worth of your life? Yield, for slay you I cannot." "Make no words. I would have slain you without question. By the love I bear King Pellinore, I would sooner die than face him yielden recreant against his son's worship. So finish."
Then Aglovale, in great anguish, went up the field and came to King Arthur, and he besought him piteously to take the battle off his hands, that Sir Griflet might live, for he would not yield. Launcelot, who came riding down leisurely, beheld Sir Aglovale bareheaded, all bloody and spent from long fighting, and heard his prayer.
"On my faith, he is a right good knight," said Launcelot to the winds.
"I will not so," said Arthur, "for you shall finish out this battle, or else as a defaulter you shall be served with shameful death. But first," said Arthur, "your fellows here present have no mind to release you from the titles you stand to maintain. And second," said Arthur, "there is great suspicion of this battle as not of true intent and purpose, but guileful and dishonest. Therefore I must needs have it brought to justification of death on one or the other. And last," said King Arthur, "unruly have you, Sir Aglovale, defied me and scorned my head to take you in default. So look not that I should lightly acquit you, and except you perform to the uttermost upon Sir Griflet, you shall have the penalty."
"Oh me, what folly have I done," said Aglovale. "My lord Arthur,
To my own account justly have you answered me, but as to Sir Griflet, consider mercy for him, who would have honestly slain me out were I in his case.
As for Sir Griflet, said Arthur, sorry am I to lose so noble a knight, and that in a wrong cause. But this battle was of his seeking, and against all counsel. In Mogrin or Ghoul he took it, and now must abide it. And well I deem that if in all integrity he did jeopard his life, he would sooner lose it than give occasion against the worship of the Table Round.
Aglovale in his distress spoke to his father. Ah, sire, King Pellinore, as I am your son, though unworthy, give me counsel. Not for all the world would I slay Sir Griflet, yet shameful death is great dread and bitter dole.
Then failed the iron heart of Pellinore. With a groan he fell forward, swooning for sorrow. Lamorack and Durnor took him up between them. Both were like drunken men, unsteady, and spoke thick.
Come, said Lamorack, get him hence, lest he recover before this matter is resolved and done with.
Get him hence by yourself, said Durnor. I stand here. I turn not my back at this extremity.
Lamorack turned once for a moment, and earnestly, with tears running down his face, he looked on his brother Aglovale, who as rain to parched earth felt that kindness on his trouble, and judged it for counsel. A whisper of ruth began as Sir Aglovale stood to look, as it were, his last, after father and brother, and then slouched wearily back again to Sir Griflet, to find if he might yet help him from his hard choice.
"Ah, my Lord Arthur," said Sir Launcelot, "may you not find him better terms? For never saw I one in so piteous a case as set between shameful life and shameful death. For to slay Sir Griflet would be a shame for ever."
"For the sake of his noble house, and for the sake of Sir Griflet, I am right heavy," said Arthur. "But I may do no otherwise for rightful judgment, or I should aggrieve all the many here who approve the contention he bears against Sir Griflet."
"Ha! That is sooth," said Gaheris and others.
But as many more spoke out for mercy.
"Look you, Sir Lancelot," said Gaheris, "how, save his brother Sir Durnor and your brother Sir Ector, none of those taken from Sir Turquin's prison and fellows to outrage will excuse Sir Aglovale from title as liar and traitor? Now, beside these," said Sir Launcelot, "do any here present gainsay excuse?"
Then no voice but Sir Gawain's rose against Sir Aglovale, while Sir Lionel de Ganis, Sir Brian de Listenoise, and some others told Sir Gaheris he spoke at fault as to them. Said Launcelot then,
"Give me leave to meddle, good my lord, and to treat for Sir Aglovale. For though he be all so much to blame, yet he shows here as a good and true knight."
"I am loath," said Arthur, "as this battle touches the honor of the Round Table, to doubt and scandal. Yet as for that, Sir Griflet is the more to blame, and, I ween, scoffer Sir Dinadan most of all."
"I will so deal as to write it. Give me leave," said Launcelot.
"You may assay," said Arthur.
"Sir Gawain," said Launcelot, "bring to remembrance how I rescued you from Sir Turquin's brother Carados, when you were bound over thwart his saddle. And you, Sir Gaheris, how in like case I rescued you. And you, Sir Kay, how by my means you were put from prison. And you, Sir Brandel." And so on, Sir Launcelot named some 30 knights. "And since," he said,
All you have offered me thanks and worship for these rescues. I require you for my sake to excuse Sir Aglovale from his battle, and to commute on terms that he may live."
"Sir Launcelot," said Gawain, "I may not refuse you."
And so answered all. It said that because of his shameful deeds Sir Aglovale should not be relieved on easy terms.
"So be it," said Launcelot. "Choose you an assessor, and we will deal."
And straight Sir Gaheris was chosen, and with him he treated and agreed. Aglovale, in great despair, went back to his adversary, dressing his heart to bitter death.
"Sir Griflet, there is no remedy, but one of us must die or yield."
"No question," said Griflet feebly. "I have got my death, as I think. So stand not, but take my life."
"Live you, for 'tis I that must not."
"Would I could serve you so, but I have no force."
"Set your heart to live. Mine is set to shameful death."
"Shameful death?"
"Yea, sir, I leave this battle to be hanged." "With all my heart I thank you for your great pains spent in vain. And, Sir Griflet, I pray you say what you can for me to my father."
"Shameful death!" said Griflet. With a strong effort he rose upright and heaved up his sword. Aimless, by mere weight it fell, and he with it came to earth and lay senseless. There was no more help in him.
"God grant I be hanged to some purpose," said Aglovale, as he turned to go again to ask his penalty. "And God grant it be over," he said, "before Lamorack come again."
Down to meet him Sir Launcelot came, shining. His head was bare, he bore no shield, and his sword was ready drawn.
"Leave Sir Griflet, Sir Aglovale," he cried, "and have ado with me, for I take up his contention against you, and will prove it upon you."
Lightly then, as though he bore no wounds, Aglovale sprang and laughed for joy, and wind and sun touched him from open heaven, as God could grant no dearer grace than tears from Lamorack and death from Launcelot. In a breath their swords were clashing together, and with stroke and stroke, still Aglovale, like a madman, laughed. Biding his time, Sir Launcelot played with him, warding and turning his random strokes. And before long, with fine force, he struck Aglovale's sword clean from his hand, and would not suffer him to have it again.
"Now, Sir Aglovale, choose you to yield or die."
"I have no choice, Sir Launcelot, but to die."
Then Launcelot tempted him.
"Yield to me, Sir Aglovale, and I will insure you against shameful death, if language and body may. And I will insure you that none in my hearing shall ever name you amiss, but he shall answer to me."
"Sir, I cannot," said Aglovale, "for albeit I have been liar and traitor, perjured and coward I will not be for exchange. And as you are named courteous Sir Launcelot, put me from my trouble quickly, and before God I will give you thanks."
"Now God have mercy on your soul," said Launcelot, and he swung his sword sheer upon Aglovale's head.
Yet deliberately from the crown he severed but the hair to the winds.
"And keep your body alive to a better life," said Launcelot,
while Aglovale stood mazed and lost, and looked at the sun and the flowered field, and the sword that had not slain. Frantic tears sprang, draining his strength like blood.
"Begrudge not a proof of your worship," said Launcelot, greatly moved.
"Sir, Such mockery is vile, whatever my sins. Ah, Sir Launcelot, you that made me glad.
Know now, Sir Aglovale, that King Arthur will release you upon terms. Will you take penance as readily as you take death?
Fair sir, can you swear that you are not beguiling me to new scorns, and that Sir Dinadan has no voice in this matter?
So of your charity, deal, as I have bled over much to keep my wits clear.
By the faith of my body, you need not dread, and I promise you I will require of you no more than I would myself perform, put case that I had offended as you. Yet an you say the loath word to that, and put yourself into my hands as overcome, I will take you and keep you from shameful death as well I may.
Ah, sir, you could name no penance I would refuse.
And I do greatly need to live, yet I look to be out of this coil by now.
I warn you, Sir Aglovale, you may not be lightly quit, for very shamefully have you misdone.
With that Launcelot took up Aglovale's sword, and holding him by the hand, brought him to Arthur. Aglovale, like a child, confided and held, for he was greatly spent.
"Sir Aglovale," said Arthur, "at the instance of Sir Launcelot, and with the assent of your fellows, I am content to discharge you from this battle, given that you assent to the terms he shall put for your life."
"Sir," said Aglovale, "I will never say loath for life or death in this matter."
Then said Launcelot, "I require you, Sir Aglovale, in the presence of our lord King Arthur and our fellows of the Table Round, to swear here on your sword to take penance in this wise. Soon as you are able, to go in your shirt barefoot with a crier to decry you at every market cross. So on your feet to go hence to the forest marches. There, like him you so evilly betrayed, to abide pains and shame according to the custom that Sir Turquine used, and there to rear a tomb for him, and found and endow a religious place, with good men to pray daily, for the soul of him and his fellows dead in that prison. So shall you be held quit of your deeds."
Straightway Aglovale kneeled, laid his hand on his sword, and swore to fulfill all.
"Give here Sir Aglovale's sword," said Arthur, "for I will keep it from him till he shall redeem it to full satisfaction."
"Sir, I will get it as soon as I can go," said Aglovale. He stood on his feet and tried to word fair acknowledgment. Deep color rushed up to his face. He had not blood enough left in him also to man his heart. He swooned as Lamorack came again.
"Now may you say, King Arthur, that you have a fair fellowship, if this be the worst of your knights," said Launcelot. And he reported how Sir Aglovale had answered him.
Yet Arthur never after did favor Sir Aglovale, for cause that once he had given answer unknightly. To the wonder and chagrin of Brose, Sir Lamorack, with Sir Durnor, brought his master to lodging, and unarmed him to see to his hurts. They found upon him his ware of Cilis. Lamorack muttered, "Defend us! Would he be such a holy terror among us?" Durnor muttered, "In hair! He fought so in a hair shirt! Yazoo! Is it for enchantment?" Their brother's eyes lifted upon them indifferent, laying reproof to their curious and troubled minds. Durnor said, "Alas, brother, pardon." Lamorack drew away. Straightway Aglovale asked for him weakly.
Brother Sir Aglovale, Bros has more skill to serve you than I. Sir Lamorack, grant me my desire. Ransack my wounds with your own hands.
Nay, but why? Said Lamorack, disquieted.
Ah, fair brother, said Aglovale painfully, either to heal from your touch quick and clean for a token, or to rankle. Let me know.
Lamorack drew back, stricken with compunction and daunted. He was deeply distressed.
Fair Lord Jesu, he said inwardly, sweeten my heart at my brother's need.
Yet could he get no ease.
Alas, he said, there is no such miracle of healing in my hands.
I take no keep, assay, for good or ill.
I cannot, I will not, said Lamorack,
and went out weeping.
The wounds of Aglovale seemed to do well enough without him, and they were not slow in healing over. Durnor would hearten his brother against his penance.
As for the pain, said Durnor, as I know, it lasts not long. And as for the shame, many knights better than you and I have endured it.
Thus did Durnor encourage his brother, who held his peace under him.
And as soon as he was whole, with strength for his penance, Aglovale went in his shirt barefoot from Camelot, and a crier decried him at every market cross. So on his feet he went and came to the forest marches, and there he took pain and shame as meekly as any gray penitent, and there he provided fitly for a rich tomb and a priory place where prayers should be made daily. Then came Sir Kay on behalf of King Arthur, and delivered him his sword again, as he had redeemed it, to full satisfaction. Then came Nacien the Hermit down from Wenlock Edge, and blessed him with good counsel. So Aglovale came to an end of his vain passion for renown. End of chapter 4.